You are listening to Desperate Acts of Capitalism, a podcast about money, marketing, and how it all goes wrong.
Join us in a wonderland of burning money. I'm Evan Swope.
I'm Arman Maharaj.
And I am C.T. Kelly. And today, Arman, I think it's your episode.
That's my name. Yes, yay! It is my episode.
What have you got for us today, my friend?
Well, so this episode kind of went on a journey as I researched it, as can happen. Something
like
that
the Hobbit.
Think you guys have...
Oh, like The Hobbit, yeah.
Experienced, yeah. Exactly like The Hobbit. And I was originally going to do this episode on a particular airline because it's our custom to cover one business and how it goes wrong in some way, right? But
that is tradition.
I found that was not possible. Even though there are plenty of terrible airlines, as we all know, and I think just me saying terrible airlines still already brought names to your head, this was not possible to reduce to one airline because really the problem is with the whole industry. And obviously, like, systemic issues in industries are common in any market, but especially for airlines, it's really bad. So let's go ahead and jump right in. It's clear that flying has gotten worse recently.
Yeah.
And yet nothing has overtly changed from my perspective as a passenger or from what I see on the news. And yet little things that used to be quirks of the flying experience now seem more frequent, like long, agonizing delays on the tarmac or rude passengers or overcrowding, cancellations too. These kind of things are less incidents and they're more the background noise of flying now, something that you simply expect. So when I was waiting to get on, when I was waiting to fly to Columbus and I was in Chicago, I think it was at midnight, I was in a plane with the air conditioning stuck on hot.
God, my God.
During the summer. And this is in, you know, it's in the Midwest. Like, Midwest summers are muggy.
Right.
Yeah.
It was definitely over an hour. I think it was almost 2 hours in that hot plane before the staff at the airport came and took me off. Right? It took everyone off.
It sounds
right?
dangerous.
Yeah.
I feel like somebody would get heat stroke.
Yeah. And the weird thing was the flight attendants were talking to the pilot and the pilot just did not answer. Just refused to give an update.
The passengers are cold. They must be warmed.
Yeah. So,
please.
I don't know. What
please stop this.
You open the cabin and you open the cockpit and the pilot is like incubating his eggs or something.
Like he's hotboxing in there. When we got going, it was like almost 2 a.m. It was really, really late.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And that's gotten common. And there are reasons for that after COVID, but we're going to get into that later. But yet nothing structurally has really changed, right? There's just been a slow degradation. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have had any travel nightmare. I don't know how often you guys fly, actually.
I fly very rarely, so luckily I haven't had anything too crazy. Very short flights.
I fly about twice a year, and I've had, like, I'm pretty good at flying, so I've had my share of incidents, though. The worst flying experience I ever had was on Spirit Airlines, but something I'm sure you're going to talk about on this
I've heard
episode.
Horror stories. About
yeah,
Spirit,
you must be some kind of clairvoyant or something. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah, crazy. Yeah. How like yeah, that was totally from my clairvoyance and not my horrendous personal experience.
I think that people could probably already guess Spirit's going to be in this episode. Yeah, well, a lot of people have had really terrible experiences in recent years, and obviously, the Boeing controversy has been hanging over all of this. Now, we're not going to talk about that because that's part of airplane manufacturing. That's technically a different issue here. Definitely a lot of companies are partially culpable for some or completely culpable for some of the accidents we have seen in recent time that have somehow gotten less press. Again, we'll get to that later. Okay. But we're going to try to get to the bottom of why airlines have gotten so bad. And where I was going to start, right, for a couple of reasons, where I was going to start with this episode, and we are still kind of going to start here, budget airlines, they're relatively new. They're relatively new arrivals in the market. Mm-hmm. So the first real budget airlines that of any sizable nature come around in the 80s and really have picked up momentum recently.
You could say they've taken off.
They've taken off. You could even say they've taken off. They're not only terrible in themselves as a flying experience, but they have dragged down legacy carriers with them.
I didn't even think of that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my God. I can totally see how the Spirit model would like force all of their competitors to cheap out on their own services as well.
Yes. And there
oh
are
God.
There are multiple factors going into that cheaping out, right? So one reason that they drag people down with them. So actually, let me explain how it works. So when Spirit charges like $30 or something insane, I don't know, something insane for a flight, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
They make it up by unbundling, which if you don't know what that means, it's when you take a normal package for a consumer and you make them pay more for things that used to be free.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've got a fucking story here.
Go ahead.
So, like, I was flying from LAX up to Washington once, right? You know, super easy flight. That's like 3-4 hours. Like,
yeah.
Nothing. So I'm shopping for a plane ticket online, and I see a Spirit flight, and it's like it's like $150 cheaper than every other flight on the board. And I'm like,
can I ask? Do you remember exactly how cheap it was? Was it under 100?
It was. It was under 100, and it was like $75 cheaper than every other flight. And I was like, well, that's awesome. I'll definitely do that. Yeah. And then I get there and I check in and I've got my backpack and my carry on. And I'm like, hey, I'd like to go to Washington, please. And they're like, oh, you actually have to check your bag. Like it costs money for you to take
yeah.
your big rolly bag on the
oh,
plane.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, how much money is that going to cost me? And they're like, oh, well, that's $125.
Oh my God.
And I was like, well, fuck you.
Yep.
Like
you tricked me.
Yep.
Like, literally, it's. I was like, I felt tricked, and then I get on the plane, and it's like the seats are only half as big.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're so much smaller, and everything costs money. Like, you don't get, like, complimentary drinks or snacks or anything. Like, you don't even get the fucking peanuts. They cost, like,
yep.
$6. And so I was sitting there, and I was in the very back corner of the plane, because I super cheaped out on this flight, and I am crushed into the corner of this plane. It is one of the most uncomfortable experiences I've ever had, regardless of flying. And this was like a crowded city bus level of like discomfort. And then on the way back, I had to check my bag again, and they charged me another $125.
Oh my God.
So yep. I thought I was doing the cheap thing, and I lost money doing it.
Yep. Yeah. That, yeah, Spirit makes its, they make their profit on suckers like you, right? It's, in a way,
they
it's
do.
Not, it's not wrong to call it a scam.
It 1,000% a scam. I was scammed.
I mean, that is, I mean, a lot of their business model is intentionally yeah. giving deceptive prices and not telling people about airline policies to milk them dry of their cash, right? So the thing is with Spirit, they make their money off of that in part, right? So sometimes they can match or partially match or even go over the normal price of the ticket with their unbundling. With things like you. Like with
oh,
you,
yeah.
they
I
went
lost
over.
Money with the unbundling.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
yeah.
And they're even more aggressive.
Even cheaper just to go with the mainstream airline.
Yeah. But the money they make is not just more because of the unbundling, it's actually in a limited sense, it's compounded. Because here's how taxes work for these flights. For most flights, they focus on the price of the ticket, and anything else, extra services are untaxed.
Oh.
So not only are you making back the money, you're avoiding the taxes you would have to pay. And so if you have a $30 flight and you have to pay like 5% of that, I mean, think about how much that is, right? So compare that to like a $150 flight or something else, a $100 flight. Like what's 5%? It's $5, right? So
right.
if you scale that, right? Or imagine that for longer haul flights, that's a lot of savings.
Right. Per flight, per customer.
Yeah.
Like that's crazy.
And on top of all that, these budget airlines often keep their planes moving constantly. Sometimes they'll only be on the ground for 15 minutes before the passengers are getting on. That's typical. 15 minutes of the passengers
that,
are getting on.
That does not feel safe.
Yeah, they maybe gave it a cursory yeah. wipe down, if at all, right? And then the next people are going. So I'm not going to shout out Southwest, by the way, like a call out Southwest, because Southwest actually, at least in as much as I've researched into it, I can't find much dirt on them. They actually seem like a great company.
Yeah, that's always my go-to airline. Huh. I've had mostly good experiences.
There you
with
go.
Them.
Same.
They're in America. They're a budget airline that actually has a lot of unionized staff. They're happy to be there. So, and Southwest, they also hop from place to place very quickly, but they don't skimp on how they treat employees. It's more fair overall. So
yeah,
just as a little word of advice, after doing all this research, if you're going to fly and you're listening to this podcast episode, go with Southwest. Do not go with Spirit or any of this other cheap. Definitely.
Frontier Airlines.
Yeah. I mean, Frontier's terrible. I don't know. Is it pronounced Allegiant? Yeah, Allegiant. They actually have actual safety issues, but we don't have time to get into all that.
Oh, God.
But let's keep the ball moving, right? So let's talk a little bit about, briefly, the Spirit leadership, right? So there's this guy named Ben Baldanza, who became the CEO of the company in 2006. And he is the one who really took Spirit and made it what it is today, including its reputation, right? So Baldanza didn't care about the negative reputation of the airline. What he wanted to do was to hack it so that even if people hated Spirit, have to use it anyway, basically. So Spirit used to be classed in something called a low-cost carrier. Baldanza almost single-handedly created the category of ultra-low-cost carrier for Spirit. That's how far he crunched expenses.
Awesome.
Nice.
He was the first in 2010 to charge a fee for carry-on bags, starting at $30. I mean, this is how much it's come.
Oh my God.
It has started at $30 per bag and then $40 if you didn't do it in advance. $45. He also encouraged controversial ad campaigns such as the Many Islands Low Fares promotion in 2007 and a moving. Do I have to spell that out, what that means?
Please. No. I need to know what that means.
Many Islands Low Fares, abbreviate that.
Oh, come on. Really?
Yep.
Sex sells, I guess.
Yeah. And speaking of sex sells, they also had a moving advertisement.
Excuse me, ma'am. Ma'am, if I could spare a moment of your time. I was promised MILVs. Are there MILVs on this flight?
You've been tricked.
Yeah. They put you in the MILF caboose that they dragged around the plane.
Just a shipping container. They're like dragging behind it.
Right. Yeah, some blow up dolls in there. So they so that was in 2007, and then later they also had a moving advertisement on the back of a truck with a stripper dancing on a pole next to a sign for cheap flights to Las Vegas.
Classy.
Yeah. And basically, he didn't care about controversy, and in the end, he did make money. I mean, Spirit is still. They've had their downturns, but they've stayed pretty profitable throughout his tenure. And now he's no longer the CEO.
Yeah.
Frankly, Baldanza is nothing in terms of his antics, and even in terms of his success, is nothing on the CEO of Ryanair, Michael O'Leary. As Americans, have you guys ever used Ryanair? Because they don't fly to America.
No, I haven't heard of that.
No, I haven't even heard of it.
Okay, well, Ryanair, I mean, typically they make multiple times what Spirit does. They are kind of a meme in Europe, not like Spirit, where it's just literally terrible all around. With Ryanair, some people hate them, and some people like them because they feel like they can game it. And to a limited extent... It's kind of true. I mean, I've used Ryanair a lot because if you are able to like really take almost nothing with you on board, you can get insane prices. Yeah. Mm. If I could afford to, I would not use them though, because as a company, they have a lot of problems and I almost don't want to give them money at all. So Michael O'Leary, he started as the financial officer of Ryanair in 88 and then he became CEO in 94. The whole time, basically riding a wave of intense and, to an extent, ingenious cost-cutting and media controversy.
Where have we heard this story before?
Yeah.
Every single episode.
So he's gotten in trouble for a lot of things, including he was heard in an interview where he was complaining about airport security because he wanted people to get onto his planes faster. And he said that airports should be focusing more on single Muslim men. It is in the late aughts. He said that the need for wheelchair, I'm quoting from an article here. He said that the need for wheelchair facilities of this, Sky News article. He said that the need for wheelchair facilities on each floor of an office he had built in Dublin was complete and utter nonsense. He said that fairly shortly we'll have to have gender fluid toilets, adding, I'm male today and I'll be female tomorrow. And he described obese airline passengers as, quote, monsters, unquote, saying, if you have complete monsters, you may need to buy two seats.
So just real stand-up guy.
Yeah, fantastic human being.
I'm sure that this will be great for his long-term business plan.
Yeah.
Real free
I'm sure
thinker.
One day this will all even out into a nice steady business one day.
There's also a frankly, I think, even more horrifying story about him. Here's the first line of a CNN article. And I want you to guess what year it's from. Ryanair has confirmed that South Africans will no longer have to take an Afrikaans test to prove their nationality before boarding flights to the UK. Now, if anyone is not that familiar with South African history, Afrikaans is not only one of many national languages of South Africa, definitely not the only or leading language. It has something of a history of racism and apartheid for many South Africans. Especially if you say it's the only legitimate language of the country. So they had to take a 2-page test in Afrikaans to prove they were South African before boarding flights to the UK.
Look at their passports? Or like,
apparently that was not the passports were not enough for whatever reason. But guess what year this was from?
I mean, the fact that you're bringing it up means it has to be like 2018 or something.
Evan?
I don't know. I feel like there's a historical event that I'm not clicking.
This is from 2022.
Oh my god!
Very recent.
But was this during the pandemic when people were just saying shit?
I think this was right. Well, this was technically right after. Jesus. But actually, the requirement was during the pandemic. I don't know how long it was in place, but it was there. To give you a sense of his personality, he's an obsessive horse racer with a personal stud or a collection stud, what do you call it, ranch of different racehorses with names such as War of Attrition, Don Cossack, Tiger Roll, Road to Respect, and Sir Deschamps.
Fascinating.
He names his horses like Hoi Four players name their gaming accounts.
That's certainly a guy.
That's definitely not into anything shady.
But so the thing is, Ryanair continues to be very profitable, even with all of the horrific mistakes and like controversies they get into. Another thing that they're known for is their incredibly loud landings.
Oh?
Yeah. And loud and hard landings. there's a trend. I'm going to pull it up for you right now, and then I'm going to pull the audio for our editor.
Oh, Lord.
So that we can play this for all y'all. Just take note of how fast the ground is moving by and how quickly it is lowering.
Whoa, shit. Oh my God.
Yeah, that is a common occurrence on Ryanair. And the reason they do that, as you can probably guess, is to save time.
To
the gate. And out as soon as possible. And those few minutes...
As long as the passengers don't die, then, you know, like, whatever corners you can cut.
And now,
that's terrifying.
The seemingly miraculous thing is Ryanair has never had a fatality. I don't know how, but they've never had someone die in their place.
We don't know how, but they're going to keep rolling those dice, I guess.
It's a testament to the security of air travel that even Ryanair has never had anyone die.
They've tried
somehow. They have had people get injured or have oxygen-related incidents during cabin depressurization, but no deaths. So I'm not going to show it to you for time, but there's also an infamous video of Ryanair deploying its reverse thrusters when it's still in the air. Reverse thrusters is basically what funnels the air back straight out of the turbines, right? Or whatever they're called. I actually don't know if that's the technical term. But the turbines shoot the air right back out. And you're supposed to only use them when you're on the ground. And there's one video of a Ryanair plane that wants to deploy them as soon as possible. So they bounce a little bit too high, and then the reverse thrusters deploy mid-air and almost unbalances the plane.
That is terrifying.
Yeah. There's a trend.
Like shifting into reverse on the freeway.
Yeah, exactly. So
to slow down.
We're going too fast.
There's a meme in Europe of people who carry a glass of water during the landing and try to see how much is left afterwards.
Oh, my God.
Now, here's the thing. Okay, as insane as Ryanair is and how memeable it is, and I could go on about Ryanair, it leans into its chaos. As insane as it is, it's not really the culprit here, and budget airlines are not the culprit in why flying has got so bad.
Hmm.
Not only have all airlines gotten worse over time, but American airlines have gotten especially bad. Now, one thing you have to remember is that in Europe, airlines have to compete with rail. They have to compete with trains, which we really don't have a lot of, and companies, including our beloved Southwest, have lobbied against rail in America, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have to compete with that. I mean, airlines don't have to compete with that where we are, and deregulation is way worse in the U.S., or significantly worse. So in Europe, you have a lot of airlines that you can choose from, with many of them being quite good. And in America, you really only have a few. You really have only have four major airlines with a couple tiny local ones thrown in. Right. And even the best one, right? Which what do you guys think is the best American carrier?
Oh,
JetBlue?
That's a good answer.
Maybe, yeah.
JetBlue might be the best. JetBlue might be the best.
I don't fly a lot, so it's hard to say, but that's probably, from hearsay anecdotes, that seems like the most, the best one for the price and everything.
Yeah, benefits for JetBlue definitely scale the more you pay. You do get better results the more you pay. And their economy is, solid to good, right? Solid to good.
Right.
Delta is what a lot of people will say, because Delta's bigger. And even Delta is just nothing compared to some of the things you can get in Europe. I mean, in Europe, you have things like KLM, which is pretty solid to good. And Turkish Airlines, if you consider that, right? Turkish Airlines is really
good. Oh, yeah. I remember being on Qatar Air, and that was
Qatar
fantastic.
Possibly one of the best in the world, right?
Yeah, that was really nice.
Yeah. But in America, it used to be really good. I mean, in our popular culture, Pan Am, even though it's long dead, is still a cultural touchstone for classy, amazing flying experiences, right? As a name.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So what happened? Well, like everything, it all went wrong at the end of the 70s.
Ah, Reagan.
Airlines used to be... So for the rest of my research for this, I'll be relying a lot on this one book by Ganesh Sitaraman, who is a Canadian professor, policy analyst, with his book, Why Flying is Miserable. It came out relatively recently, I think a couple years ago.
Okay.
I recommend it to you if you want to read more about the subject. It's really good. I read it cover to cover. And basically, in the book, Ganesh talks about how the flying industry used to be a regulated oligopoly, right? Flying is not an industry where you really need or even want too many airlines. It's okay to have a few big ones just for the sake of network and managing connections. What happened is it all got liquidated. All these protections got liquidated in the 70s with something called the Airline Deregulation Act. Now, before the ADA... the government controlled price so that airlines were forced to compete for quality. Not only was it more viable to have luxuries, I mean, people wanted more luxuries as much as possible to give to their passengers, so they choose them over other airlines.
Right, because that was competition.
Yeah, because competition wasn't about price. When it becomes possible to compete for price, quality gets bad fast.
Right.
Right?
Hmm.
So, I mean, airlines before this, they had bars, really good food. There was even, I think on Pan Am, I'm pretty sure it's Pan Am, they had a piano bar you could just go and hang out in.
Oh, my God.
Now, amenities like this exist in Middle Eastern airlines, and which something that has to do more with nationalization and their geographic location than oil, though that's a factor. Some of those still exist on these Middle Eastern airlines, but in America, that's laughable. I mean, you would never have lounge areas in a plane. I mean, that would be insane.
There's no room. They've crammed the passengers so tightly in every plane. You can't have amenities like that anymore.
Exactly. It because when you deregulate prices and other factors, right, in the way that our government did, it means that you just want to cram as many people into one plane as possible. Low prices and terrible service.
Yeah. Right.
Here, let me read a passage from Ganesh's book here. Public utilities are essential infrastructure, critical for commerce, social life, and national security. Reliability and stability are paramount. From 1938 to 1978, air travel was governed under this regime. The American tradition offered, and by American tradition, by the way, this was a term that in economics used to implicitly mean regulated capitalism. That's how people used to use it.
Huh, fascinating.
The American tradition offered a system of structural regulations together achieved a variety of national goals. The system was designed to serve small and mid-sized communities, to prevent airline bankruptcies and bailouts, to ensure airports wouldn't be dominated by one airline, to avoid monopolization and predation, and to maintain...
Fascinating.
And to maintain stable, reliable service at all times. It did this through a set of rules that included the regulation of prices, routes, and entry into the airline business. During this period, a relatively small number of highly regulated big airlines dominated the market. The legal system ensured that airlines offered high-quality service throughout the country and prevented the abuses that naturally come with limited competition. Hmm. So basically, skipping down in the chapter here, after this is what he says happens after deregulation. The four biggest airlines ultimately ended up with an even larger share of the market than before. But now, without the duties or restraints of the regulated era, airlines had become an unregulated oligopoly.
Awesome. Great. Cool.
What could go
so
wrong?
The market, it quote-unquote restabilized around the same small group of airlines with no protection for consumers.
Right.
I mean, very
literally cool.
Literally the worst possible outcome. And the first people to suffer were people who lived in largely unpopulated, or rather comparatively less populated states. And it was so bad, so fast. Many of these lawmakers who passed the ADA quickly apologized for passing it because their constituents could no longer fly. Or could
I'm glad that they apologized. That sure helps.
So
Senator
sorry.
Quoting again.
Our bad.
I fucked
quoting
up.
Again. Senator Howard Cannon from Nevada, a Democrat, argued that the airline industry, quote, clearly does not have the characteristics of public utilities, and that, quote, no community will lose air service as a result of this bill. So then that was right before the passing. And after the passing, I can't find the quote, but basically almost right after it was passed, I mean, like a few years later, he apologized and said, like, this was a terrible mistake. And then when people started to talk about re-regulating it, one of the guys who was in charge of the regulatory body at the time that regulated airlines. Yeah. So this economist named Alfred Kahn, who was in charge of, quote unquote, regulating airlines, but in reality is in charge of butchering them. He said, partial re-regulation is, I suggest, just about as feasible as partial pregnancy.
Uh-huh, sure, yeah. Uh-huh.
It's literally impossible.
Compare everything to pregnancy. Compare everything to pregnancy and it'll all be okay.
Right.
Regulated capitalism is like being pregnant or not being pregnant.
It's like a baby. You're right.
True.
Fuck.
So basically what happened, like what I said, is there was a quick burst of small competitors, and then it recoalesced into an oligopoly. And now we start to see an insane lowering of the standard, the flying experience, right? And even Khan, the guy who deregulated this industry, he acknowledged it. There's a CEO of American Airlines at the time, Frank Lorenzo, who, you know, participated in incredibly aggressive and illegal, you know, competitive practices. But after he realized, I mean, even the people in this oligopoly, they do not like the industry being deregulated. Even though they're destroying the industry, they hate it because it makes them less secure, and they have to suffer periodic massive losses. And Lorenzo,
crazy, huh?
Lorenzo was one of the first people to call this out. And after one of the hearings, there's this guy, Senator Cannon, who is speaking. Some of these senator names are like...
He sounds like a Metal Gear Solid villain.
He was making this statement about why airline deregulation wasn't that bad. And Lorenzo cornered him out in the hallway and said this to him, quote, "You fucking academic pinhead. You don't know shit. You can't deregulate this industry. You're going to wreck it. You don't know a goddamn thing," unquote.
We got to bring back Pinhead. That's a real good one.
Yeah.
And you academic pinhead.
You academic pinhead.
Listen, Poindexter.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was a political staffer named Phil Bakes, not Senator Cannon. But you get the point. American Airlines, the leadership of American Airlines hated this decision. And American Airlines leadership actually has repeatedly voiced its dissatisfaction with airline deregulation. So even the people running the oligopoly do not like it. In fact...
So that makes me think that there's a very small group of people that are making an ungodly amount of money in this current situation.
Yeah,
and I think it also might be an addiction situation where they're just so hooked on quick, fast profits, they are tied to it and also can't get out of the game. Because who's going to advocate for... Who's going to be the first to ask for regulation?
Mm. Right. I'm not going to do it.
But there's incentive even for them to ask for it. There have been over 189 bankruptcies since deregulation of airline companies. And only a third...
I think that's a lot.
Sorry, only two-thirds of the years since deregulation have been profitable at all, have turned any profit.
What?
Only two-thirds.
That's insane.
The rest have been net drains. Have been lot losses.
Who was pushing for this?
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, in the book, Why Flying is Miserable, the thesis is just... I mean, it's hard to pin down why these things happen. They're complex. I mean, Why Flying is Miserable kind of suggests that it's ideological, which is certainly a big factor then. I mean, deregulation was insanely rampant at this time in the 70s. And we're just paying for it now? But there are a lot of possible reasons.
Hmm.
But now, if you look at the ledgers of these companies, here's the possibly the bottom of the iceberg. I mean, I'm saying that's the bottom, but during this book, there were two suspicious suicides that we don't even have time to get into.
Oh,
of,
real cool.
Employees and regulators. But the bottom of the iceberg is possibly the fact that American carriers simply are, on the whole, not profitable as flying businesses at all in themselves. What I mean is the service of flying someone from Los Angeles to Chicago or wherever does not bring in nearly enough money to keep these companies afloat. You know what these companies have become?
What?
They've become flying banks.
Oh, God.
It's always financialization. Every single episode like this where it's like, oh, this huge cornerstone of American life that suddenly took a fast turn into the shit pipe. It's always because it gets financialized.
Yeah. Right. Oh, 100%. And now it can't go back even if it wanted to in America. I mean, other airlines do not have this level of a crisis. I would consider this a crisis. And today, I mean, we like talking about, oh, I've earned this many points, and I've earned this many miles for XYZ purchase or XYZ flight. When those were first...
You're always saying that, Evan. You're always saying how you love earning points about your... with you guys Spirit Airlines.
Stop talking.
If you know anyone who's middle-aged, it's like a small point of pride, right? Like, oh, I've earned this many miles, and I use them in this crafty way.
Right, yeah. Right.
And they get these insane credit cards for these airlines that cost like $600 a year. It's like, why don't you just save your money?
It's an offer that's kind of too good to turn down, even if you're partially going to benefit from it. These point systems, when they were first introduced, were seen as highly unethical and almost struck down.
Really?
I mean, airlines were taken to court over this because when you start using these kinds of loyalty programs, what you're effectively doing is saying, I'm going to take this customer and make them only fly American or only fly whatever, Delta.
Yeah.
Right.
That is an insanely powerful institution. Right. Even if you take away the monetary value of the points and the incentive to fly more with them and so on, you used to be able to game them some, and now they're impossible to game. Of course, they've been cracked down on.
Right.
These nowadays, a lot of times when airlines put up their companies when they're taking loans, rather, they don't use the airline as collateral. Why? Because the airline is worthless. The airline makes a negative loss.
So what are they using as collateral?
Their point systems. Their banks. That's what they are. Yeah.
No fucking way.
Yeah, it's very common. Very common.
How is that legal?
That's the only part. Again, deregulation. But that's the only part of the business that actually turns a profit. The point system.
What?
Oh my God.
Which are... And in a way, it's more powerful than what a bank can do, right? A bank can't control the amount of currency that's dispersed.
Right. They're essentially, they have a captive audience and an unregulated currency.
They can decide how much currency they want to give people per flight or purchase and what you could buy with it.
Right. Yeah. At that point, they're effectively enforcing virtual borders and a virtual currency. Like they're a micronation.
Yeah. They're more powerful than a bank. Banks wish they had this much power.
That's fucking crazy.
That is the current model, and that is how they have stayed afloat. That plus insane bailouts, right? Like after the Gulf War, after 9/11, after 2008, after COVID. But every time they were bailed out, they didn't put it into a rainy day fund. One, they were not required to.
Oh, really? Two, really? After a company got a massive government bailout, they didn't immediately just, you know, they didn't save it for a rainy day. They immediately just spent it more on expansion.
It went right into stock buybacks. They didn't even like build up the company. Oh, and in fact,
wow. What
in
a
fact,
shocker.
In fact, after COVID, the number of people in these fleets, the number of workers shrank. Even though the CARES Act, which is designed to bail out these airlines, had an explicit provision not to fire its workers and to keep them on. The company nonetheless pressured its workers to retire early or take quote-unquote voluntary furloughs. So...
So... Oh, no, we're not firing you. We're just reducing you to 1 hour a week, and you can quit on your own time.
Right. So when people came back, inevitably, to fly, there were not enough people to fly the planes on time. So you had cascading, insanely disruptive delays and complications and people being overworked because they didn't care, right? They knew it was going to happen and they didn't care because who is going to stop them and who is going to outcompete them? They're all doing the same thing. They're all cutting down on their labor. So they don't have to worry.
Well, and every time a big industry pulls some shit like this, it's like, okay, there's a massive lack. What happens is that like more predatory third parties are created to fill in the gap. It's like you get people like, it's like, oh, there's like a massive need for airline labor. Why don't I start like Uber for airline hostesses or something? Like there's always, every time I look into something like this for this podcast, it's always like, oh yeah. And then this entire like auxiliary industry of super fucked up shit like just showed up to fill in the gap, and now it's leeching 60% of these rickety profits off of everything, which makes it even harder to break this loop.
Literally, the way airlines work is they use their businesses as a front for their real business, right? Which is point systems, which banks are drooling to get their hands on, right? Because it's a very lucrative deal to make.
Well, of course, because it's just banks.
Yeah.
Like, it's just more banks.
Yeah, and they're the banks, and then the airlines are the central banks of their own mini dictatorial economy.
Literally, like, no wonder all these companies have a massive, like, race to the price bottom.
Yeah.
Because they all, I think at a certain point, all of these companies know, like, it is going to take a stiff summer breeze to collapse this industry. Like,
yeah.
if the wrong regulator
collapses
looks
constantly.
At the wrong... Right, but like for good, in a way where it's like your investment, like your shareholders are going to sell. Where it's like all it would take is the wrong regulator looking a little too hard at the wrong balance sheet, and this is all fucked.
Well, here's the thing, CT. All it would take is for the government to say, we're not bailing you out. That's all it would take.
Right.
That's all it would take. Next time you go, you file for Chapter 11. You can't file for Chapter 11 next time. You have to take the L and sell your assets and give it to someone who's not going to be so irresponsible. They make no rainy day fund and have no preparation for any kind of slump. In an industry known for slumps, that constantly slumps.
In the slump machine industry.
Yeah. I mean, air travel is one of the most irregular markets out there, right? And even with all this aside, even with how bad it is in terms of its viability economically and how it treats its workers and how it increasingly forces people into retirement or cuts down on essential costs, another thing it's done is they have created what we now know today as the hub and spokes model. I don't know if you've heard that term.
I've heard it vaguely. It's not jumping to mind, though.
Yeah. So what it means, as you can guess, is there are some airports on the map that serve as hubs where you have a high amount of traffic, and there are spoke airports in more minor locations that you can jump to, right? So you're never going to get they're not going to have a bunch of flights to Bakersfield or wherever, right? But there's going to be a ton of volume in LAX. So Bakersfield, I don't even know if Bakersfield has an airport. Bakersfield
sure
would be or Reno. Okay, Reno is going to be a spoke, right? And LAX is going to be a hub. Now, in the past several years, something like almost 60, I think the number is 57, almost 60 different towns have been knocked completely off the airline map, where major carriers simply won't work. Maybe tiny local services made for that town will serve, but no one will cover them. Pittsburgh's a small town, a small city. It's not a small town, right? It's not a village.
Right.
Pittsburgh is like a major enough city, and now pretty much no major airline will work there at all.
That's nuts. Pittsburgh is like a huge city.
Yeah, it's like a well-known American city, right?
Yeah.
If you like, it's in the tier below cities like Chicago, and in my mind, like Chicago and LA, like the major ones, it's in like maybe the secondary ones. It's not that low.
It's definitely bigger than Reno.
Yeah. So they've just decided they're not going to go there anymore, and companies have stopped working there for that reason. They've left Pittsburgh, right? So it has a cascading effect on other industries, results of deregulation. And furthermore, the fact that they do decide to concentrate in these hubs and then serve peripheral spokes makes them far more vulnerable to disruptions like cyber attacks and even more commonly, weather events. If you have a ton of flights passing through Dallas-Fort Worth, right, a significant airport, right? And there's a really bad storm in Dallas-Fort Worth. Flights across the country are going to be canceled, no matter where you're going. Maybe you're going to Washington. You're not even going close to Texas in theory. In theory, if you're going from, let's say, New York to Washington to Seattle, maybe you have to get a flight that goes through Dallas-Fort Worth, just because Dallas-Fort Worth has been decided as a hub,
right?
In fact, the term used for the mega monopolies in these hubs is fortress hub, right? So simply because it's a fortress hub, your flight has to go through Dallas-Fort Worth, and now it's canceled or delayed because of a blizzard, right? And these things that would not have to happen with point-to-point models, and these things are becoming more common, these disruptions, with climate change and the increasing consolidation of these hubs. So it's only, it actually continued to get worse.
Great.
Right, right. Again, what I said with, like, all it's going to take is a stiff breeze to blow this entire industry over, and the government have to be like, no,
I mean,
your assets.
Here's the thing.
We're nationalizing you.
People have been willing to put up with it so far. I mean, there has been some measures to protect consumers under the Bush administration and the Obama administration, I believe, but very slightly. We'll probably need to get to a truly horrific moment of uncomfortableness or a terrible safety incident to actually get things to change. Because unfortunately, that's how things work in the airline industry. You have to have some big flashy story of a plane killing 300 people to get things to change. That's the thing, because these companies are so influential in their lobbying, right? Even though many of them would, in theory, like to see regulation come back, they're in this process where they're chained into this machine saying, help me, I can't stop hurting myself. Even though they'd be better off.
Lord.
So, unfortunately, it's going to take pretty bad insight. That's my pessimistic diagnosis. And, if you want to, here, I'm going to give some possible solutions that a policymaker could possibly make to this. The solutions would be...
Policymakers are listening.
Of course they are. They don't have to nationalize it, but that is one solution. Many nationalized airlines are the best in the world, right? And none of ours are nationalized, and none of them care about being diplomats for their countries. Like, Singapore's airlines are famously really incredibly good as a flying experience and reliable. Right. Saudia, right, is, they serve a government that's horribly unethical, but they're very good. They're nationalized. Qatar, again, nationalized. But Americans don't really care about their image in terms of their airlines, even though we're going to start to become the butt of the joke very soon in terms of how bad our airlines are.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a real embarrassment, just like our other embarrassments. But you don't have to do that. You can just return to what we had, which is a regulated oligopoly. And this is a situation where that's not a problem. Anything that is a utility, right, like phone lines, actually to an extent benefit from having domination in a few hands, right?
Right.
You want a few people managing a large network. You don't want it to be too chaotic. That's okay. It just has to be regulated so that people compete for quality and not for price. As long as people are competing for price, we're going to be turning the heavens into a living hell. Okay. That's the show.
Oh my god.
Yay. Let's
All right. Is it outro time?
Desperate Acts of Capitalism is C.T. Kelly, Armon Maharaj, and Evan Swope, and edited by Noah. If you like this episode of Desperate Acts of Capitalism, please share it with a friend and consider writing us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to support our work and access special bonus content, check out our Patreon and the link in the episode description. And remember, God is real and big things are coming.
Bye!
Yay!
Do we still do the byes?
Yeah. We can.
Goodbye.
Yay! Fun sounds as the audio fades out.
Fun sounds.